Thanks for returning for another episode of Jacko Stackology. I need to begin with a quick disclaimer. If you have not listened to episode 1, please do so now. It includes a long-form disclaimer that will hold true for this episode and all future episodes of this podcast. By listening to this episode, you do agree that you have listened to the first episode and understand and agree to the terms of this disclaimer. In quick summation, this podcast is meant to be for educational entertainment. I am not a medical doctor or a licensed therapist, and you will not use any of this information to treat yourself or any other individual for medical purposes or otherwise. These terms apply to any guests or affiliates. As always, I encourage you not to take anything I say as truth at face value, but rather to research the information for yourself. Okay, I'm glad we got that out of the way. To begin episode 3, I want to open up with a brief story about a couple of well-known names in neuroscience. The first one is Camillo Golgi, who was an Italian biologist and pathologist working within the central nervous system. He is perhaps most famously known for his Golgi staining technique, sometimes known as the black reaction, because it can be used to stain specific neurons to be black. The staining technique was a major breakthrough in neuroscience in 1873, and there have since been several anatomical structures named after him. Golgi was also well known for his reticular theory of the brain, which proposed that the brain was made of these wired extensions that were all interconnected as one massive reticular formation. The second person I want to talk about is Santiago Ramón y Cajal, who lived around the same time as Camillo Golgi. His past is perhaps one of the most interesting, and he may in fact be the subject of a future episode. Unfortunately, I don't have the time to talk about him much in depth here, so I'll just stick to what is necessary for our understanding of neurons. Santiago Ramón y Cajal was a pathologist and a histologist who specialized in neuroanatomy in the central nervous system. He actually went on to take Golgi's staining method and perfect it, and in doing so, he countered Golgi's reticular theory with what he called the neuron doctrine, which is now a universally accepted concept that the nervous system is made up of discrete individual cells, which we call neurons. In addition, Cajal expressed another important concept in neuroanatomy, known as the law of dynamic polarization. This law dictates that the nerve cells are polarized, meaning that they receive information at one end of the cell and direct that information out toward the other end of the cell. In 1906, both Golgi and Cajal shared the Nobel Prize in Physiology and Medicine. During the presentation of this award, they both took the opportunity to give their lectures one at a time, battling it out for the idea as to the true structure of the brain. In Cajal's lecture, he proceeded to tear Golgi's theory apart, and in time, Cajal's ideas went on to become confirmed by modern technology. He had become a pioneer of modern neuroscience. Okay, so that was kind of a cool little history. I do want to get more into Santiago Ramón y Cajal in a future episode, because that guy seriously lived just the wildest life ever. He's super interesting and has just kind of a crazy, funny history. But I think that's what we need to move forward, learning about neurons and how they work as the fundamental building blocks of the nervous system. So a bit about the basic structure of the neuron, right? In reality, there are many types of neurons, and they all have their own structure that specializes in whatever function. I'm not going to bore you with all the different types of neurons there are, but I do want to tell you about the basic structure of the neuron and, you know, how they function generally speaking. That way you have a better understanding of the brain and how the cells of the brain are actually communicating. So basically, the neuron has like three zones for how it handles information. There's an input zone, which is where the information is received. There's the integration zone, which is where the information is processed. And then there's the output zone, in which the information is actually released and sent to the next neuron. I would like to talk to you about the structures within each zone and how the flow of information moves from one end of the cell to the other end in accordance with Cajal's law of dynamic polarization. It probably then makes sense to begin with the input zone. The structures here are the dendrites of the neuron extending from the cell body. The dendrites have on them what are called dendritic spines, which receive information from the boutons of another cell. And I'll talk about what boutons are in just a second. The information from these various inputs can sometimes be excitatory, making it more likely that the cell will fire. We call these excitatory postsynaptic potentials, or EPSPs. So remember, if I say EPSP, I mean it makes the cell more excitable. Some inputs will also be inhibitory, making it less likely that the cell will fire. And we call these inhibitory postsynaptic potentials, or IPSPs. So if I say IPSP, I mean that it's making the cell a little less likely to fire. All EPSPs signals and all IPSP signals, all this information, will converge in the cell body where they collect at the integration zone. The integration zone, also known as the axon hillock, is located at the part of the cell body that extends into the axon. This hillock is called the integration zone because it takes all the EPSPs and all the IPSPs, right? And at this location, all these signals are integrated. And their overall summation will determine whether or not the cell will become excited enough to fire an action potential, which is an all or none response. If the cell does become excited beyond that threshold, and the action potential is fired all the way down the axon, now we're in the output zone of the cell. At the end of the axon, the signal arrives to what are called synaptic lutens, the thing I mentioned earlier, where neurotransmitter is being stored in synaptic vesicles. Once the signal arrives to the lutens, the vesicles bleb out of the lutens, releasing neurotransmitter into the gap between this neuron and the next neuron. This gap is known as a synaptic cleft, and the neurotransmitter will have to traverse this cleft in order to make contact with the dendritic spines of the adjacent cell. So just a quick little bit of terminology. The neurotransmitter is leaving the cell, and at that location we call that presynaptic, right? So that's the presynaptic cell, is the cell that's releasing the neurotransmitter. And then the next adjacent cell at the dendritic spines that are picking up this information, we refer to that cell as the postsynaptic cell, just in case you hear me use those terms in the future. And this whole structure together, the presynaptic cell, the synaptic cleft, and the postsynaptic cell, all together, that makes up what we call a synapse or a synapse. So if you ever hear me use the term synapse, that's the specific structure I'm talking about. The basic flow of information goes as such. Information first arrives at the dendrites, it then enters the cell body, it collects at the axon hillock, and then fires down the axon, where it arrives at the terminal lutens, and then is released and crosses the synapse to the next adjacent cell. The reason that I wanted to get into this mechanism was to point out that at any time in this process, something can go wrong. Things can be warped and modified, although I will not go into the various ways that these things can happen or the effects that they would have on the cell and on the brain as a whole. This information will become pertinent in later episodes when we go on to discuss mental illness or the effects of drugs. I'm really sorry for all the jargon and the overly complex description of mechanisms, but believe it or not, they get much more complex than that. But now that we have gotten through all that information, we will begin to pick up in the next few episodes. In the next episodes, we're going to talk about the larger structures of the body and how they operate. I'll briefly talk a little bit about the peripheral nervous system, and then I'm going to move on to the central nervous system, where we can really get into the structures of the brain and their functions. And that's the real fun stuff.